You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, you're listening to Cattails, and I'm Cat. From the Babies in the 70s via 80s solo smash Missing You to the release of a stunning new album, John Waite is not stopping. In a career spanning over four decades, John has written, recorded, and amassed a back catalogue of musical treasures and now unleashes Wooden Heart Acoustic Anthology to remind us of his talent as he weaves that voice through a stripped back collection of songs. This is the one with John Waite.
Hello, John, how are you?
Well, listen to that accent. You're so British.
Do you miss it?
Yeah, I do. Where are you now?
I'm living in North Norfolk, actually, just near the coast, about 4 miles as the seagull flies. Yeah, beautiful. It's a nice view I've got here, so I'm quite chilled.
Oh, it sounds great. It sounds really lovely. You know, outside of my window, it's all palm trees. It's like, you know.
Oh, on the side of the world.
It's a bit much. It's a bit much for me.
Is it good weather though? Is it nice sunshine?
Yeah, no, it's nice and it's not too hot yet. You know, it was windy yesterday, which was spectacular. Oh. And it's really gorgeous actually. I've got a nice place, got balconies and everything, but it's I do miss the seasons, but you know, you can say that and then you find yourself walking home in a downpour and you think, you know, not really. You know.
Well, yesterday it was torrential rain out here yesterday. For this time of year, May, you do not expect it, do you? April, maybe a few showers, a bit sunny in May, but no, it's been pretty unsettled, I have to say.
Yeah, I talked to my mum a couple of days ago. She said it was foul weather when that was in the northwest. But, you know, global warming, that's what it is.
You're so right. It's a shame, isn't it? Because, to be honest, I'm not one for the sun anyway. You know, British, as you say, you know, my skin type is pretty pale. It doesn't do me any good going out in the sun.
Right.
But, you know what, it's nice to have a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
nice,
and we don't see much of it these days.
No, everything's turned upside down. I mean, by this time, usually, the weather's really hot here. And it's more temperate, you know. It's actually pretty nice. It's cooled down here in California, but we do have all the fires and everything with the drought.
Yeah.
So can't win.
You can't really, can you?
Yeah.
How long have you been out there then?
Not
is
really.
It, is it a while since you've been living out there?
Oh yeah. No, I first came over here when I was 21 to join a band in Cleveland. Then I went home, then I joined a band in London and came back and toured, and then 2 years ago I got an American passport just to make it easier to go back and forth, you know.
Yeah. Actually, you've got a little bit of a twang there, but you can still hear your Britishness in there, which is lovely.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you mean a twang like an American
twang? Yeah, a little American twang, but you still got that accent.
I don't know what you mean.
Right now, Governor. I ain't got no accent. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I say things like petrol. What do I say? Over here, I say, let's get some petrol.
Yeah.
And over there, it's like, you know, I say things like, let's get gas and stuff. You know, I can't get any of it right. It's just, I'm in the middle.
You are.
Yeah.
And I bet you sound English to them, don't you? But to us, I can hear your twang. And you're like, suddenly you're in no man's land.
Well, yeah. Mid-Atlantic, we call it.
Is that right?
How's the show going? How's the show? Is the show knocking him dead?
Well, do you know what? I've had some fabulous reviews lately. It's been incredible, and for me, it's been really going from strength to strength, and I'm so pleased because I'm attracting, you know, really nice people to speak to, good people to speak to, like yourself, which is
that's important.
It is, you know, if you're going to do it, you want it to be
it
a
is
value,
very important,
don't you?
Yeah, no, I did this podcast with this guy from Morecambe. It was his first, it's like fifth episode, but it was like a big deal.
Mm.
He got a hold of me on the internet, and I thought, well, why not, you know?
Yeah.
So I got this guy on Zoom, and we did this podcast, and he was about 32. He's got twins coming and stuff. He's really nice guy, but funny and just really just straight up, you know. And just really, really enjoyed talking to him. And you just, you know, you can't really tell what you're going to get till you're in the middle of it. But
no, that's true.
You know, you do try and pick the good ones, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, there's so much out there, isn't there? And, you know, a lot of people have been doing it for quite a while, like myself. And, you know, I mean, I've been in this business for almost 20 years, John. I don't want to admit that because it makes me sound old.
Wow.
and
now, let me tell you.
It's so strange. No, I remember your hit, so that puts you in the bracket. You know where I am in the age bracket.
Oh.
So
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And but there are a lot of young people coming through doing stuff, but to get an audience from your perspective to reach, which is of course why you're doing it for publicity. And that's what we want to give you, because, I mean, I work with PR agencies. I do PR myself.
Great.
And it's about making sure that everybody gets exposure, and that's what you want, isn't it? And it's hard to choose, isn't it? Who do you go with, and who do you invest your time with? It's quite difficult.
Well, I just, you know, at this point, I was going to get a PR person. I thought, well, you know, who knows which way it's going to go, you know. So I thought, well, I'll just put it out there.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I've got everybody in touch doing interviews. And so I got this woman today from somewhere in America. I won't tell you where, but she just wanted to sort of clear the air for an interview next week. And she wouldn't get off the phone. Mm. And she was like, she had one of those voices that just keeps going, like, you know, from a different era.
Yeah.
And she was just rabbiting on for, like, you know, for 20 minutes. And I'm trying to get off the phone.
Just leave me alone.
But, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, thanks. Yeah, it's great to talk to you. Well, I've got to go now. There's a candle burning in the oven.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, the really weird stuff. And, you know.
Oh, bless
you.
She
just didn't take the hint. And it was just, I was just trying so hard to be polite.
Oh,
but
it's difficult.
You do get the odd one that's like, you know, should have a restraining order. You do your best.
You do, don't you? But you know what? The other side of it, John, you know, it's good that you're getting so much exposure and so much excitement over your new work. That must be exciting, because, you know, you've had so many different eras in your career, haven't you? And then suddenly it's like, oh, people are really interested in this one. So what's different about Wooden Heart to create that spark?
Well, I've been doing the Wooden Heart thing for a few years, like volume one and two.
I know.
And it was just a respite, really, from all the volume. I've always loved acoustic music. And everybody and their dog was putting out unplugged records from about the late 80s forward.
Mm.
So it just felt wrong to do it. But then I was living in Nashville, and I've always loved country and blues. So it was a natural extension. And I think it's maybe with lockdown, I just kept it going because it was just an easier thing to achieve. I went in the studio to make an electric record, and I couldn't get it to sound right at all.
Mm.
It just didn't sound like me. So, but every time I picked up an acoustic guitar, it sounded like music. So I did volume three and then released all three albums together, Wooden Heart 1, 2, 3. And yeah, it's done very, very well so far. We're sold out in a week.
Wow.
All the albums.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
Amazing.
I know.
That's great though, isn't it? That's it.
That's gonna
ignite your passion again for everything. You know, it's like, geez.
Well, once you get some approval, you know, it's like once somebody says, you know, that's really good, you go like, and you get back in the ring and think, you know, this is really good.
Yeah.
But this lockdown thing has been the craziest. For creativity, it's just been the weirdest thing, because you can't really talk to people, you can't go out, you can't play live shows.
Yeah.
And the energy just disappears, and you'd be surprised, you know, the inertia.
Mm.
You know, it's like you just breathe out and forget to breathe in. You know, it's just like, wow, you know.
It's tricky, isn't it?
But anyway, it's great to have the record out. Yeah, it really is. But you tend to be creative when everything's going on around you, like touring, and you have a schedule.
Yeah.
But, I forced myself back into the studio just to get out of the house.
Yeah, it sounds like you really feed off that process, don't you, by the sound of it. And when it's been really calm, has that really drained you then? Has it made you think, oh, do you know what, I'm lethargic, I can't be asked to do anything?
Yeah.
You know, the flip side of that creativity, you need that spark to really keep you going.
Yeah, I mean, I think without other people, I think people are more social than they believe. I mean, I can spend hours by myself and be quite happy, but after a couple of weeks, you know, I should be wearing it struck me as very weird to spend a year off the road and then 4 months more. We're playing in about a week. We're actually doing a gig in a week. Oh. But it's just been so weird not having people to bounce off and you know, interact with.
Yeah.
But it's a relief to do what I do, and I'm glad to get back out there.
Every time I think of you, I always catch my breath, and I'm still standing here, and you're miles away, and I'm wondering why you left. And there's a storm that's raging through my frozen heart tonight, and I hear your name in certain circles, and it always makes me smile. I spend my time thinking about you, and it's almost driving me wild. And it's my heart that's breaking down this long distance line. I ain't missing you at all. Since you've been gone away, I ain't missing you. No matter what my friends say, well, there's a message in the wire, and I'm sending you the signal tonight. You don't know how desperate I've become, and it looks like I'm losing this fight. In your world, I have no meaning, though I'm trying hard to understand. And it's my heart that's breaking, yeah, down this long distance line tonight. I ain't missing you at all. Since you've been gone away, I ain't missing you. No matter what my heart says, there's a message that I'm sending out, like a telegraph to your soul. And if I can't bridge this distance, stop this heartbreak overload, since you've been gone away, I ain't missing you. No way. No matter what my friends say, I can lie to myself these days. I ain't missing you.
Hi, this is John Waite, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
Well, we at the end of the day, human beings are all about social interaction, aren't they? And we forget that.
Yeah.
And I suppose this lockdown has been challenging, hasn't it, in that respect? It's like suddenly you're...
Well, I think people retreat to the internet. I think the internet became absolutely gigantic, more so than it was before lockdown.
Mm.
And, you know, that tends to sort of take the place of people. You feel like you're actually in a room with somebody, but you're not. You can't sometimes, you know, just get the tone of the voice or anything. It's not really real connection. It's kind of like it's enough, but it's not a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think without Joe Strummer from The Clash said once, without input, there's no output. Mm. And I thought that was pretty articulate for Joe.
Oh,
you know,
that
was really
terrific. That sums it up, doesn't it? I mean, I was at Cambridge Folk Festival one year, and he was Joe Strummer was there with his new band or something.
Oh yeah.
And I was due to do an interview with him that very year. It was a year before he died, and I was ill. Do you know what? I was ill and I couldn't go, and I was so distraught because, of course, The Clash, they're iconic, aren't they? Let's be honest.
Yeah, they're the great band. I just finished this book. I read a lot, and this bookshop I go to has quite a lot of used editions, secondhand books and then new books. But there was a couple of older books that was in really great condition. But there was one by a roadie for The Clash that came from my hometown, or actually studied Islam at Lancaster University.
Okay.
And then... Yeah, and then he was a roadie for The Clash, and it was like them going to America, and yeah, it was really great, you know. And then there was another book called Passion is a Fashion. That's a brutal look at The Clash from the ground up. But you really, I mean, you grasp just how meaningful they were. There was the Sex Pistols and The Clash that were really at the front of the whole thing. And then there was everybody else that was like really great or not bad. But they broke through the most. And interestingly enough, they were the most articulate. You know,
well, this is the thing.
They really were. I mean, the Sex Pistols are great, you know.
You're so right. This is the thing that's surprising, actually. I don't know about you, but I look back at those times. And when you lived it, you know, you believed all the... I don't know, the messages you were told, whether it was the media and everything, saying, oh, it was just all rubbish, it was trash, it was so, they're just so talentless, blah, blah, blah. Now you look back on it, you know, sometimes I interviewed Glenn Matlock from the Sex Pistols, and we were having a conversation, and I was saying, do you know what, looking back, it is so articulate and so cleverly constructed, you didn't appreciate it at the time.
No, the music itself... I mean, Lydon went on to be like almost a philosophical sort of landmark for his generation. I mean, he was such a kind-hearted person underneath it all.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to fuck around with him, you know. And then there's the actual sound of the record and Steve Jones. I mean, I know Steve. I've done his show as well. But you listen to that record, you know. I mean, you know, she was a girl from Birmingham. You know, it's like, whoa, what?
I know.
You know, and it's just really, and it's sung so well. I mean, for somebody who's supposed to bark and grunt and sort of scream through his songs, and I'm a singer, I think that's, he's just incredibly underrated. You know, I mean, I think he has his own style. If you go back into what it actually is and where he gets it from, like the Dadaists and Surrealist poets and all the sort of stuff that he's sort of like been part of, really, from his taste, to get all of that out to the public. And when nobody else had done it, I mean, it was pretty fearless, but it stands up. I can listen to the Pistols and the Clash and just really get off on it. The production's great. The performances are great. I mean, they really are just vicious. They're great, you know.
They stand the test of time, don't they? I mean,
yeah.
That's the amazing thing. You know, that time was so revolutionary. You know, we're going right off track here from your album, but do you know, was so revolutionary. It's amazing, isn't it? But now when you look back and you think, do you know what? That was bloody brilliant. It was brilliant in terms, and you didn't appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, you know, I tell you what's really surprising. I can remember coming home to Lancaster for Christmas holidays, seeing my mum with my girlfriend, and I from America, we came back just for a week or two, and I remember what I was wearing, and I remember a record store and seeing some young girl walk out with Never Mind the Bollocks. Mm. And then I remember coming home the same week with London Calling. So I don't know how separate those times were, but you look back at how young you were when that was going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Pill have been great. Rise was absolutely beautiful. Mm. You know, I could be wrong, I could be right. You know, it's like, whoa. Yeah. But, you know, just great bands.
But a great time, wasn't it? I mean, and actually you were part of that. Okay, it wasn't the late 70s in terms of like your massive hit with Missing You. Okay, that was early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
But it was all of that era. For me, you know, looking back on time, it sort of, time distorts, doesn't it? It slithers into one of the other things that were really spectacular. And there's pinpoints, aren't there, that you look back on. And actually, Missing You is one of those times in history where I look back and say, I remember where I was when I heard you singing that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are songs that do that, you know. I mean, I'm really getting up there now, but I sort of like look at my life through decades, you know. Mm. And the 90s were spectacular. They're a very underrated decade. You listen to something like Tracy Chapman's Fast Car,
yeah,
and you remember how tumultuous a lot of the 90s actually were. Mm. I mean, I was living in New York City still, and it was all go. But you look at something as poignant as Fast Car, and that becomes timeless. Mm. I mean, it helps if the production's good, which it is, and which was good on the Sex Pistols and the Clash. Mm. But certain songs just sweep us up. And, you know, they just become part of our mental self. They become us, you know.
Yeah, and they bring back, as soon as you hear them again, it transports you. It's a little time machine, isn't it, for me? You hear it again, and whoosh, you're back there. You feel it, don't you? You feel that energy of that moment. And that's what's so spectacular about music. It's so incredible about music.
Yeah, it's an astounding thing. There's, like, I've just done a Dylan song on the new release, Not Dark Yet, and I can remember hearing that for the first time. I just moved to LA from New York. This is about, I don't know, 20 years ago, 18. And I have the album, and I'm listening to that song, and I'm thinking, Jesus, you know, what a song. And then years later, I thought, you know, if you can have a crack at anything, make it a challenge. So I went for the hardest song. Mm. But I mean, again, with that, you know, Not Dark Yet, that was 20 years ago. And these wonderful songs that come up once in a while, they don't come up every year. But there are songs that just make the clock stop. You know, time actually stands still in your head, you know.
Shadows are falling, and I've been here all day. It's too hot to sleep, and time is running away. It feels like my soul has turned into steel. I've still got the scars that the sun didn't heal. There's not even room enough to be anywhere. It's not dark yet, but it's getting there. Well, my our sense of humanity has gone down the drain. Behind every beautiful thing, there's been some kind of pain. Well, she wrote me a letter, and she wrote it so kind. She put down in writing what was on her mind. I just don't see why I should even care. It's not dark yet, but it's getting there. To London, and I've been to Gay Perry. I followed the river, I got to the sea. I've been down on the bottom of a world full of lies. I ain't looking for nothing in anyone's eyes. Sometimes my burden is more than I can bear. It's not dark yet, but it's getting there.
Hi, this is John Waite, and you're listening to Cat's Tales.
It's weird, isn't it? What do you think those elements are, though? I mean, you've had a few of those in your life, so
yeah.
You're in a good position to be able to tell us what you think.
I think it's being the moment. It's the moment. It's gathering up all the influences and the tones and the unexpected that's coming. People suspect what's going to come next month. They're in their subconscious, I think, and you sort of beat them to the thought. You can include a lot of new ones, and any hit song usually is a surprise. You know, you get like formulaic kind of classic rock, and it's absolute crap, and even I think the people that buy it know it's crap. But it's great songwriting, you know, when it comes in the first few bars, you just know. And I think it represents that generation. It binds all the people together, for those 3 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
And it's serious. It's a beautiful thing.
Do you think there's a formula to it all, though? This is the thing. I've spoken to quite a few people, as you know, and I've tried to sort of like get to the bottom of that formula because I'd love to. I mean, I play the ukulele, not very well, I hasten to add. And I
oh,
know
nice.
That you were a ukulele player
yeah.
in your youth.
No, I've got one myself. I've got one.
Oh, beautiful instrument.
I've got a lanikai, baritone.
Have you?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, I've got a little soprano.
Yeah.
I call it Dinky Tinky because she's so little and cute.
Hello.
I wish I was better. You're laughing now, aren't you? Looking at Dinky Tinky.
Wow. I tell you what, if you play the ukulele, if you play it, it's only got four strings and you can only make so many chords on it, but you'd be surprised how many Led Zeppelin songs are just like in the ukulele.
Oh, wow.
And it's because I think Jimmy Page was just, you know, in his spare time, noodling around on the uke or a tenor guitar, which is only four strings. But you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't be. It's unbelievable how many melodies come up from Led Zeppelin songs.
Well, that's amazing. I'll have to look into that. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
you know, they always say about status quo and three chords, don't they? So, you know,
yes.
it's amazing how much
yeah.
you can construct around a particular sound. So I've got to really go there. I can't remember what the question was now, where we were going with that whole thing before I mentioned the ukulele.
Yeah, what was it?
Now? What was it we were talking about?
No,
we were talking about...
Oh, I was talking about that.
Go on.
Songs. Was it songs?
It was songs.
I don't know.
It must have been. No, it was actually the songwriting technique and how you construct something that's really, you know, powerful. How do you do that?
Well, you know, a few years ago, I was in Nashville and I was trying to write a song with a guy. And I'd written six songs in 6 days. And I was tapped and this guy had driven like 200 miles. To work with me. This is Danny Lowry, he's called.
Mm-hmm.
Big mountain guy, lived on a mountain. And me being European and sort of like, you know, a little bit edgy, I suppose I was a different kind of animal to work with. So he made a real effort to come and work with me. And we couldn't get anything done. And we went for a pint. It got to 12 o'clock and I said, Danny, I ain't got it, you know. And we went down to this little restaurant called the Crab Shack. And this beautiful Iranian girl bounced out of nowhere. She's about 17. And she was going to go. She was flirting with us. And we were trying to flirt back. But it's, you know, two old geezers. But it was like...
Yeah.
And she said she was going to go and play with a boyfriend at the Ace of Clubs that night. And she was just the most beautiful girl, full of life.
Yeah.
And Danny had this line, young hearts can fly restless and wild. And I couldn't do anything with it. I usually take something like that and then write up. Complete song. And as we're looking at this girl, I thought, what about the Bluebird Cafe, which is a small joint in Nashville where people go for open night,
yeah.
open mic night, you know,
yeah.
it's the big break.
I have heard
and
of.
I sort of saw this girl coming from out of town trying to get a break in the music business. She's Iranian. She's beautiful. She's 17. It's a lonely world. God knows what's going to happen to her.
Mm.
And we went back and wrote Bluebird Cafe.
Mm.
And it took maybe 3 hours. And it's such an intense lyric. And it's like a short story. But that is like when there's nothing going on and you're really stuck, something happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you got your senses going to overdrive. You're looking for something. And there's a story in everything you look at.
Yeah.
But that was, case in point, that was really like, you know, out of the blue. The right person walked in,
yeah.
and it's probably one of my top five songs that I've written that I, you know, think is any good.
Oh.
But you just get lucky.
Oh, how beautiful! Well, you're saying there that you think is any good. I mean, you're being a little bit, aren't you?
Well, no,
you
I mean, you know, there are. I mean, all the songs on Wooden Heart are the best songs I've written.
Mm.
I've put a lot of the songs on. Some of the songs have been hits, like Missing You
mm.
and Isn't It Time.
Yeah.
I've done a few, but they were lyric-driven songs. And so there's 23 lyric-driven songs on Wooden Heart 1, 2, 3. So you do get a lot of storytelling, and it fits with the acoustic.
Yeah.
So it's like kismet, you know. It's like a lot of things came together. I didn't expect it to go as well as it's gone. I listened to Touch the other day, and I thought, that's really beautiful. And then New York City Girl. And I thought, how did you write that? You know, but they are the moments that just come out of your, they're like fireworks. You know, it's like a skyrocket. You look at it and you go, I see it. And then it goes.
Wow.
And then you move on. If you're any good, you move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
You don't just hang around trying to be noticed for one song or five or 10 songs.
Yeah.
As soon as you write a good one, your mind goes forward and you want to write something better.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, that's really interesting. Mm. I love the idea there, John, that you're saying that it came from a spark. It's just suddenly there. I mean, do you think it's like divinely given, or do you think it's sort of like getting into that state of your unconscious, or where does it come from for you?
Well, you know, I keep notebooks all over the house. And when I go out, like when I travel, I always buy a bunch of notebooks and my favorite pens, and I write down all my thoughts and lines and stuff. And I very rarely use them. And I pick up a guitar and I hit a G chord or a C or an A minor, and I suddenly start singing and I have a lyric.
Mm.
And I have to really watch how many times I do that, because you don't want to wear it out. Your muse is kind of a female thing. And if you keep going back to it and you're not respectful with it, it will just disappear. It'll leave you. And if you sort of keep it like your shadow or in your back pocket and you don't overwork it, it will always have something new for you. It's like a gift.
Mm.
But once it happens, you don't plan it. I mean, I could pick up any guitar in the world right now, hit a C chord and write you a song. I swear to God, I could do it.
Mm.
And it would be a not a half bad song.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it might be even pretty good.
Yeah.
But if you're always sitting down trying to write songs, it's going to become unimaginative and uninspired, and I think it's not very good. I try and save it to the last minute, but there's always something there.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
A little spark that just ignites within you. I mean, that's just, that to me, that's awesome how you're doing that. I mean,
yeah.
I do writing myself, and I understand that sort of like, I've got a blank sheet of paper. What the hell do I write? How do I create something out of that, out of nothing? And then suddenly, it suddenly comes to me, and then I will go and then I'll produce something. Nothing along your scale, clearly, but I understand that sort of like a process of like getting it out, sort of like pushing it through myself and onto paper.
Yeah, I think if you don't question it, but it's like, you know, instead of you thinking it, I read something yesterday about like that the creative process isn't about like thinking about it. It's just get on with it, you know.
Mm.
Stop thinking about being an artist and just open up. And you know, recently I've been reading Hemingway.
All right.
And you look at that style of writing, that style of writing that's so blank and straight ahead, hardly any adjectives, and it's just I never got Hemingway till about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I went back and got some more of his books fairly recently. But you know, it's just like, you know, I think it took 2 months to write A Farewell to Arms or something. And it's a very, very, very involved book. And it was a new writing style, really, you know.
It's very in your face, isn't it?
I think it's clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how you... But I mean, like, in answer to... But as a writer, you'll know. Once you put, like, a few words down, they're either right or they're wrong, and then you'll sort of, like, edit as you go.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm on stage singing, I'm editing my voice as I'm singing.
Wow.
I mean, that's as simple as that. Mm. If I hit a note that I like, I'm going to choose a note that follows it from the back of my mind. It's not like a science.
Yeah.
But it's like flying or something. I don't know. It's like being a duck. You know,
yeah.
It's like flying.
So it's almost like an out-of-body experience for you, isn't it? It's sort of like, does it
yeah.
take you into that different
yeah, really
plane? Are you no longer... Although you're connected to the audience, do you feel like you're delivering something different to that audience that is on a separation, or are you connected? I don't know. I'm trying to describe how it must feel.
All of that.
Oh.
All of that. I never sing a song the same way twice either.
Right.
When you walk into a room and you've got an audience, it's a different sound. The guitar player's got a different mood.
Mm.
The acoustics, everything, the monitors, everything is different. And I never in my entire life have sung the same song the same way twice.
Wow.
And I think it would be disrespectful or not the point to repeat yourself on that scale. I mean, there are singers that just copy the single and that's what you're going to get. But not with me. I mean, I always see it differently every night. And some people complain about that. But I mean, it's a performance. It's something going on between the audience and your id. You know, it's like the very root of who you are. And it's out of control, really. You're in control in some way, but again, your muse, that other part of you, is completely free.
Yeah, do you know what? I get that completely, and I'm thinking, I'm trying to imagine myself in your shoes there, and it's almost like you're. Tell me if I'm wrong here, John, but I'm feeling like you're expressing yourself and interpreting that song at that moment, and the interpretation
Absolutely.
At that moment will be different to how you interpreted it, like say 20 years ago, 10
yep.
years ago, 5 years ago, and so it
yep.
sort of like morphs into your being, your self-expression today, and so it's bound to be different.
Yeah, in your present day, that's exactly right. And all the experiences that you've had since you wrote the song,
yeah.
you've changed.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've grown, and you look at the song, and you. But yeah, that's exactly right. I agree with you.
So when you're writing the song initially, you're using all your experience from that day up until the moment you write it. I mean, is it
yeah.
drawn for you from outside sources? So, you know, let's take love, which is a beautiful theme, let's be honest. Everybody uses that. But is that drawn from outside experiences?
Yeah.
Or are you putting yourself into a space of imagining what it could be like?
No, I can't do that.
Ah, right, okay.
I mean, it's like, that would be like writing a song for somebody else. I've tried it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
No, everything is from first person.
Right.
Everything is absolutely first person with me. And John Lennon said that. That's all he can write about because it's all he knows
yeah.
is himself. And you're actually lucky if you know yourself.
Well, that
but,
is true.
all this, yeah, you know. but songs like Downtown and Masterpiece of Loneliness, Missing You, all those songs are from the first person. That's something I've experienced. And you see, that's how I've managed to stay off the psychiatrist's couch. I can voice all this stuff, really, and get it out of me.
Oh.
I don't have to go and fester and think, oh, God. I can go out in front of thousands of people and say, this is what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
And they lean forward. You know, when you do that and you sing those songs, they lean forward half an inch. You know, they do. I've seen it. I've seen Willie Nelson play. And when he came out and hit the guitar, everybody, like a sea of people, just moved half an inch forward. It was incredible. But people do that when you really get that deep on them. They understand
yes.
it. That's what they're in the audience for, you know?
And they're all appreciative of what you're saying, because at some point in their life, they felt that, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. That's what they're there for. You articulate that for them, and they can understand you. You know, they understand it better. Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, do you know, that must be so incredible to feel that. I don't know, that with so many people to feel, I'm using the word connection because I can't articulate what that experience must be like.
It is, but it's wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you really play in front of a big, big crowd, and we have done, I mean, it's only last year we played in front of like 15,000, you know, and it's, you come out both guns blazing, you know, the whole band's there, it's plugged in, it's going for it. And the sound's right. And there's something about the electricity in the air. The audience is completely with you. And it takes off. That's almost like, that is an out-of-body experience. That's when you're just like, I know it sounds corny, but it's like invisible wings. You really don't belong on the human race anymore.
No, it doesn't sound corny to me. And I get that. And I do understand that. And a lot of it, the people who I've spoken to have said the same thing, that it really is like a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Almost like channeling
yeah.
something from above to
yeah.
give everybody else something they can't get access, you know.
It's, you know, music is, you know, I mean, oh my God, if you read Steppenwolf, Hermann Hesse's book, and he talks at the end about music and laughter. And, you know, it really is sort of music of the spheres, you know, I mean, it touches us all. You could, you know, I was thought the other day, there was something on Twitter. There was a black guy with his hair all done up in dreads on a street mm-hmm. playing the guitar at night. And he was playing this sort of like, I don't know what it was, like country thing. It was very danceable. And an old guy walks up with a walking stick and a flat cap and an overcoat and starts dancing. And then they both start dancing together. And it's the most beautiful thing. One guy's like at least in his late 70s. The other guy's like 22 and black on an English high street.
How wonderful.
And they're dancing.
Great.
Yeah. And, you know, that sums everything up that I could ever want to express about the world and what it should be.
Doesn't it just? It's almost like they're all encompassing, everybody's together, aren't they? Everybody's connected. Everybody's one. How beautiful.
But music, that's the key to that. I mean, you don't think about race or religion or anything when you're dancing.
Yeah.
You know, if you get a room full of people dancing to something they can't resist dancing to, they're not worried about politics. They're just grooving to the beat. You know, how heavy is that?
Oh, do you know what? Yeah. It makes you think about, you know, our sort of bygone years of things. I don't know, the cavemen just producing sound on sticks and on drums and skins. Anything to give that sort
of... Yeah, I'm still playing with some of those guys. Yeah, you should see my drummer.
Bless him. He'll be hitting you after this, won't he? Where's those sticks?
Yeah.
That's great, though, isn't it? It just brings it back to the modern time that we're all human and we've been here for such a long time, and it's still that instinct within us, isn't it, to go out there and bash that drum.
Yeah, and we're not really evolving. We just seem to be standing still at the moment. But
well, that's true.
You know, you look at the Roman times and they were probably a lot smarter than we are. You know, we've been confused by machinery and technology, but they were just pretty... They hadn't got an idea how machinery worked. They had the wheel. But they had Aristotle, you know, they had tremendous stuff.
It does make you think, doesn't it, back to the Egyptian times and things, doesn't it, where they were so, so incredible with their skill set.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, we think we've got it all today and we know what we're doing. Do we?
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe if you've got that kind of technology at your fingertips, your humanity has to take a back seat at some point.
It does.
I mean, the question is, if the planet's going to die... And we're going to poison it and all the animals, and we're all going to die of terrible diseases because of the pollution, then the only way off the planet would be like into a computer, artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
So whatever lands on some distant planet might not be human, but it would have human intelligence. But does it matter if it lands? Because it hasn't got a soul.
Oh, do you know, that's interesting.
I'm not going to get this. You get really carried away.
That's really interesting.
If the robot is watching the planet Earth from like a billion miles away, does it matter that he's watching it because it hasn't got a soul? And what is a soul?
Oh,
you know,
John.
And we're facing that in evolution. The next step is definitely computers as far as humans go, I think.
Absolutely. Do you know, I've got this theory, and it sounds pretty mad now. People think I'm going to be crazy and I should be sectioned. But I reckon the whole thing is... Life, I'm talking about the whole thing here, life, is actually a computer game. Advance that to where you're talking there. And is that not the same thing where perhaps actually this is the virtual reality?
Oh, yeah.
We could be scoring points and who knows? I don't know. It's just a bizarre thought.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I mean, there are moments in your life when you go like, you know something else is going on, but you can't put your finger on it.
Yeah.
Whether you believe in God or not, I don't particularly believe in God. I'm agnostic, really. But there is something going on behind the fabric of all of this that's way beyond our understanding. So I'm just glad I've lived as long as I've lived. I mean, I'm enjoying the ride.
Yeah.
Somebody once said back in the Wigan dance days, there was a song that it said, "It's a ride," you know, which obviously means life is a ride. But interesting. Very interesting.
It's back to your Shakespeare and, you know, the life being a stage. And we're all acting a story on a stage.
Yeah.
The same concept, isn't it? Keep coming up, don't they? Year after year after year. And we're all, like, searching for that answer. And hopefully people like yourself are providing some people with that answer through their music.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yes, you are. Come on, you are.
No. There's a song on the album called More, and it's about that exactly. It's just like being suspicious that something else is going on. There must be more to this. And it's quite a good song. But, you know, if you said that about More, I would say, yeah, it's not bad. But I can't, as a person, I'm just as confused as everybody else. I've just got a voice and I can sing and write songs, you know.
Fell out of the sky sometime in 1952, through the radiance looking for my shoes. Daddy left and Mama cried, got a passport for the blues. I didn't share their hometown point of view, 'cause I want more, I need more. Give me one good reason, what I'm living for. In this uncertain world of circumstance, with one foot in the door, at the house of truth that's burnt down to the floor. I want more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Give me more in my world every day. Tripping down the turnpike somewhere out there near the shore, looking for some words to live by. In the uncertain moments in the loam, you can almost hear it shine. Is that voice I'm hearing divine? So give me more, give me more. Give me one good reason what I'm living for. In this concrete world of fairy tales, only innocence is pure. And there will be an answer, yeah, I'm sure. So give me more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Give me more in my days here. Am I dreaming? Am I somewhere else? When I'm dancing in the darkness, am I dancing with myself? There must be more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Give me more in my world every day. Dreaming, am I someone else? When I'm lying in the darkness, am I really by myself? There must be more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Give me more in this world every day. I want more. These days that I've got, I need more of this life.
You've been listening to Cat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.